because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol and politics. How many weeks are away from November 8th?
Less than seven.
So it's time. I love this. It's time to look at 11 key legislative races, one by one. Let's start in the Senate. Let's start at Senate District 18, the only open Senate seat. Republican Dan Fion, Mark Harris, go.
What's interesting about this seat is that this is, if you look at the entire map in the Senate, this is the one that's most in play. The numbers are really there for either side to take advantage of. And what I mean by that is that, go back to 2012, Mitt Romney won that seat by 1,000 votes.
1,000.
Rick Gudick won it by 600 votes.
Yeah.
So you're talking, this is pretty even, Steven. Now, here's a caveat to all this. It sets up everything we're going to talk about. What will the environment be like in November? Will Donald Trump, who has stabilized in the polls and is kind of neck and neck with Hillary Clinton, will he stay there? Will she somehow rebound and create, you know, the usual gap we see in Wisconsin in a presidential year? Will she hit Obama's number in 2012, which was 7 points? A 7-point win is much different than a 1-point win in Wisconsin, especially down ballot. So we don't know the environment. But looking at the foundations, this is the one you go to right away. Now, a couple reasons why. On the left, Greater Wisconsin Committee has already laid down a buy, a six-figure buy in the Green Bay market. We think, though they haven't said yet, it's going to be about the 18th Senate District. It's a sign to people that they're going to go all in on that race. Because for Democrats, you have to look at the long-term map. They need to get back to majority by 2020 to have a seat at the table for redistricting, which is very important. If they don't, they're in the wilderness for 10 more years. The easiest path is either win the governor's office or win the state Senate, and there are opportunities over multiple cycles to do this. So this is a key cog in that apparatus to do this.
Also, Harris is more of a high-profile, better-known candidate because he ran 2 years ago. Dan Fion is the handpicked candidate of outgoing Senator Gudek's,
yep.
Fonelec County Chair, and he's the GOP Congressional District Chair. But Mark Harris has been, do I have it right, Winnebago County Executive,
yes.
Right?
The early vibe I've gotten is that, one, Republicans are kind of happy because the name ID and the polling they're getting back, it hasn't about even. If you think about Harris being more high profile as a county executive, running for Congress, they feel good about that. Now, the other thing is, there's this group that we don't know exactly who they are, where they get their money, but they spent a buttload of money in the primary to go after Mark Elliott, who was perceived to be the favored candidate of Republicans back in Madison because he seemed like a stronger general election candidate.
Yeah.
They thought, people I talked to thought, that they went after him to help Fion get through. Now, what's going to happen, I kind of get the feeling, is that Dan has been chair, you know, county activist for a while.
Chair,
he has commented on a slew of things in that position. They will go through that. He says comments against them. Harris has been county exec. He will talk about how he's kind of held the tax rates down, how he's cut bond. But they'll go after, well, look, you raise taxes. So it'll be that kind of a race. Interesting note, the Construction Trades Coalition, which is this kind of, you know, obviously the industry, they started this radio ad during Packer and Badger games in late August that talked about cutting the Senate GOP team. They haven't singled in anybody yet, but it's a sign that we think the union folks are going to go after this race too and kind of go for Gudex, but that remains to be seen.
Well, just a P.S. Yesterday when he talked to Capitol reporter Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, we asked him about four races. This is the only one that he didn't use the words, I feel good about.
Yeah.
So he realizes how close it is. Okay, let's turn to Senate District 14. Incumbent Senator is Luther Olson. He's being challenged by the mayor of Waupaca. I pick up vibes that people didn't think this one could be potentially as close as it's going to be. What's your reading?
Well, you look at it, I think Republicans have held this seat since the Civil War. So it's not one that you go, okay, there's a swing seat. And that's part of the problem for Democrats this entire cycle in the Senate. They're playing on generally Republican territory. The seats lean Republican, other than the 18th, which, quite frankly, in an off year, it's a much better Republican seat than it is in a presidential year. But the other ones, they're all decent Republican seats. There aren't ones you would think a Dem should pick up. But two things for Luther he's got a problem with. One, the problems of the King home
popped up. Let's note right here, since we don't have it on the rest of the schedule, the Joint Audit Committee just voted to conduct an audit. That's important, but also, the state auditor said it won't be done until
after the election.
Spring, yes. After the election. Go ahead.
Two, lead paint. Now, there's no connection between those two, But the Guardian documents we saw last week show these contributions from an executive lead paint industry, well, the paint industry, part of the leftover lead paint industry. Anyway, these donations to the Club for Growth, which helped Republicans in the recall elections,
yep.
That's given Democrats an opening to say, pay for play, and try to make the arguments Luther. Now, here's the difficulty for them. Besides the dynamic of the district, the demographics, you have a district that is covered by Green Bay media to the north and Madison to the south. It means expensive to advertise there. You have to hit two media markets, which are also scattering shot across other districts. And it's just, it's not a great seat for them. So can these two issues play into a problem for Luther, who, by the way, on joint finance voted for things like gutting the open records law, which was pulled out eventually, who has been part of Republican efforts to, well, supported them, to overhaul the GAB into the Ethics Elections Committee. Can they tie all these things together and make an argument of there's something, you know, that stinks in Denmark?
Well, and also the Democrats, every Democratic candidate I've interviewed says, we have cut aid to public schools. Now, you know the numbers are all over the lot.
Depends how you cut and slice and dice them.
Right. Do you just figure state aid, categoricals versus non-categorical, stuff like that? But Senator Olson is chair of the Senate Ed Committee. So does that wash? That's fascinating. Now let's do an overview of four key races. Let's start with Senator Harsdorf in western Wisconsin. This is a changing district because you have, I think, St. Croix County is one of the fastest growing counties. And so it's becoming a suburb for the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. But now I want to go back to a point that you said. It's incredibly hard to advertise in this market because neither of these candidates can afford the Twin City market. Am I right?
Oh, the 14th is a dream compared to advertising the 10th because Twin Cities media is very expensive. And oh, by the way, they now have a couple competitive House races in Minnesota. It's not really in play for the presidential race, but those House races are driving up the cost of TV, which if you are trying to go after Harsdorf, you have to compete with those ads.
Yes.
The expense, the message, and oh, by the way, that media market covers a whole lot of Minnesota. You're getting very thin sliver sometimes of voters. Now, the other problem is it's a very big district, so it's hard to cover it by doing doors. The Harsdorf name is well known there.
Legacy, because her
brother
Jim,
held the seat before.
And then he was Secretary of Ag.
She was in the Assembly before. I mean, the Harsdorf name. And she also, I mean, give her credit, she worked the district very hard. So you add all that up, you go, it's not there, even though she took the same votes that Olson did on joint finance for both members of the committee.
With lead paint
so,
and
GABs,
secrecy,
all that stuff. So she has those same issues, but it's a tougher nut to crack up there. So most times you talk to will say, unless there's a wave, you know, if there's a wave, then yeah, maybe you wake up on the day after and go, okay, wow, that happened. But otherwise, she should be okay.
One other factor. In this district, there are 2 4-year UW schools at Stout and River Falls. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we've been cutting UW funding, that's another wild card.
Oh,
but
again,
the Harsdorf name has been pretty golden in
that. And delivering the message is difficult up there for Democrats.
Right. Okay. Oh, I love this match. When I interviewed Dan Kopanky a couple days ago in a campaign interview, I said, Dan, is this a grudge match? He said, no, but man, it looks to me like a grudge match. Here you have Republican Dan Kopanky, owner of the La Crosse Loggers, challenging the Senate Democratic leader who took him out in a recall election. I think it's delicious. Kopanky says, I'm working as hard as ever. People tell me that's true, but Schilling is, she's pretty solid.
If there were anybody but Dan Kopanky running this district, we wouldn't be talking about this at all. It would be nowhere on the map because you look at the numbers, and it's not just a Democrat district. It's a really Democratic district, like in the upper 50s, like almost 60% Democratic district in the presidential year. But Republicans have pushed the idea that Dan Kopanky can be competitive. When I talk to Republicans, I think in their hearts they want Kopanky to come back. In their minds they know he's not going to make it. But what it does do is it keeps Schilling busy because she's minority leader. She can't go spend her campaign money on other races. She has to stay home at times and kind of tend the home fire, they say, work the district, show up at the events. It keeps her busy. So, yes, I think Republicans really think if anybody has the magic, if you will, to overcome that kind of a gap, it'd be Kopanky. But it's just not going to happen, in part because Kopanky had a reputation when he was in the Senate for being this kind of nonpartisan kind of guy, like above the fray, if you will. Dan Kopanky owns the Loggers, the kind of college all-star team in La Crosse, great business guy. The problem was in 2010, he ran for Congress. There are ethical questions that were raised about open record stuff, how we used a public government loan to pay for improvements at the Logger Stadium. Mm-hmm. 2011 came around with Act 10. He voted for that. I mean, the recall, It stripped away
his job in the Senate.
It stripped away that veneer of nonpartisan and made him look like he is a conservative Republican who does not fit that district in the profile. So I don't think it's there, but Republicans really want him to come back.
Well, also, he sat about where you're sitting now when we did the interview, and it was just obvious. He said, "What his attitude is what I've got to lose. I'm going to break my butt. I'm going to have fun. If I lose, I lose." Okay, Central Wisconsin, Wausau, 24th District, Julie Lassa versus Patrick Teston.
No, this is a seat that leans Democratic. And so in a normal environment, if Julie Lassa does her work, if she raises money, she runs her ads, she makes the dairy breakfasts, she's working hard, she should be fine. We are not a normal environment. We are in this kind of Trump world sometimes. And the theory has been this is a district where Trump could do well. I'm not saying he will, but he could do well. If he does well, can Pat Teston then capitalize upon that and have him, you know, give him a good shot to beat her? Most people I talk to think that Julie should be fine. But again, if the environment changes between now and November and there's a Trump bump in some parts of the state, not everywhere, but some parts, maybe there's one where you wake up and go, wow, we weren't expecting that would happen. So that's kind of like on a watch list, but I think it's really going to be, I don't get the impression right now from most people that they think she's going to lose, but just keep an eye on it.
But keep an eye on it for one other reason. High-capacity wells is such an overwhelming issue in this district. How is that going to cut?
And Republicans, they will argue that because she opposed a couple of bills or one bill, one version of the high-capacity well bill in the Senate, that that can be used against the farmers. The flip side is the environmentalists didn't like that, and there are plenty of people who, you know, like the environment up there in the lakes. So it cuts both ways, but it is an issue to watch.
Okay, now let's turn to the 12th. I had the opportunity to interview last week both Senator Tom Tiffany and the challenger, Van Stipen. Tiffany, they're trying to hang the shoreline zoning laws on him. And he also voted for the open records changes, which did not
become
law. All the
joint finance things that Olson and Harsdorf did, too.
Right. But when I was in a hotel room before I had a chance to interview candidates in Rhinelander, the third party ran an ad against Van Stipen saying he's not one of us. Mm-hmm. Because he was serving on the Stevens Point City Council, resigned to move into the 12th Senate District. So
yes. Was going to run for the Assembly, yep. And then changed his mind and ran for the Senate. Go back to that Trump effect. If you look across the state, if there's one place that you think Trump would do well, it's northern Wisconsin. Our family vacations up there every summer. Up by Eagle River, there's a giant green bus, at least there was in June, that had Trump in giant letters painted in gold on the side. I mean, it is Trump territory. So there isn't a perception right now that Tiffany's in trouble. What is interesting, though, is American Federation for Children went in with this big buy of about $338,000 on TV, radio, and digital, hitting Van Stipen with that message about he's basically a carpetbagger.
Not one of us, yeah.
So the thought was, well, why would you spend so much money in a district that you don't think you're going to lose? Well, the idea is, they're doing that to put that race away early, shut it down, and then send a message to Republicans of, okay, everybody, put your money and your effort into the 18th. This one's taken care of. We can all go now 18th and defend that seat and try to hold the 1914 majority.
Yeah, I think internal polls, in this 12th district shows Tiffany up maybe 6 or 8 points.
Republicans feel pretty good about where he's at right now.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, we've covered the Senate. Let's talk about some key assembly races. This Todd Novak defending his District 51 seat is really interesting because Jeff Wright, former principal in Chicago, moves back to a farm in the district. So that opens him up to the charge, you know, he hasn't lived in the district very long. Todd Novak is the mayor of Dodgeville, but he won by the skin of his teeth 2 years ago.
What's interesting is if you look, we don't really split tickets that much anymore in Wisconsin. A lot of times, top of the ticket matches like Governor Walker and Ron Johnson 2010, they were almost even. Tammy Baldwin and President Obama in 2012, almost even. What's interesting, though, there are a couple of spots where they still have a big ticket split going on, southwestern Wisconsin. This kind of swath down here, they consistently vote Democratic top of the ticket and Republican at the bottom. Now, the issue becomes in this district, it's probably one of the most Democratic of all these districts down here. Republicans can climb the mountain, but how high will the mountain be for Todd Novak come November? If it's too high, I don't know he can climb it. There are issues there because the GOP agenda, not only is it Trump an issue, because Trump is an issue for some of these people, Trump's an issue, but the GOP agenda in Madison has been an issue because it doesn't play well in parts of the district. So can he overcome that? I've already seen or heard of, I think AFC is going down there or going to play down there on radio, probably in mail, trying to help him out. I've already heard wrinklings of Mail starting against Novak. So that's going to be a target. When I've been checking the independent expenditure reports, these are the ones that say vote for or vote against. Those, they have to report with the Ethics Commission now. I'm seeing this race pop up time and time again. This one, the 85th, the 67th, 68th, and 50th.
Okay, but let's remember that Speaker Voss had so many votes for the current controversial state budget that Todd Novak did not have to vote for it.
Yep, and that may give him an independent, like an independence argument, if you will, talking to people like, well, I'm different. I'm an independent guy who stands on his own 2 feet.
Yeah, and when I interviewed him Wednesday, I said, why'd you vote against the budget? And he said it didn't have enough money in it for education, the magic K-12. Okay, we have an open seat in Assembly District 67 because of the retirement for health reasons of Tom Larson. This is kind of the old area of the former majority leader. No, that was the 69th. Okay, give me your handicap. Rob Summerfield versus Democrat Dennis Hunt.
Looking at these seats, these kind of top five that I have on my list, this one is not really that great for Democrats. I mean, it's swinging in presidential years. I think Romney won 50.6% of the vote in 2012. Again, now remember, that was a 7-point Obama win statewide. But up there, it's a little slight Republican lean. The deal for Democrats is this. The maps are not good for them in the Assembly. If they're getting back to a majority or get really close that gap in the next couple of years before the new maps are drawn, they have to communicate to voters in a district like this one, where it's not necessarily their turf, but they can close the gap, have an effective message, and win a seat like this. Now, it's not my top two or three for most likely to flip, but it's on the top five people watching right now. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch how that plays, who goes in there, and how much money they pump in. I believe Dennis Hunt, the Democrat, one issue for him is going to be that he was a finance director for the county, Chippewa Falls, Chippewa County, I believe. He was fired from that job over dispute over how to fund a human resources position. Now, he says he saw wrongdoing and raised a flag. There's another version of that, but he sued over his job. Will people have an issue with that?
I think that lawsuit is still pending.
Yes.
I could be wrong.
Last time
it
I checked,
still
it was.
Pending. I completely agree that this one could go from R to D. Well, moving on. Assembly District 68. Every year, I used to hear during the last 10 years, we're going to get Representative Williams, but they never did.
Yes.
And you hear the same thing every year with Representative Kathy Bernier in District 68. And her challenges this year, Howard White, how do you see this one?
This is a better district, and these are kind of the same neighborhood, if you will, the state up in Chippewa Valley. This one's better than numbers for Democrats top of the ticket. Obama won by 3.5 points here, where Romney won the previous one. The issue is that Bernier has a tendency to say things that are inflammatory or controversial.
She walked out of a meeting with some school officials.
Compared meeting with them to going to the dentist.
Yeah.
She is the chair of the Elections Committee in the Assembly, so they will call her the point person on things like the GAB overhaul, on things like rewriting campaign finance law, that she was a key cog in that machine. In 2014, in a great Republican environment, we were told by some Republicans that we're not feeling good about that race, even 2 weeks, a week out.
She got 52.
But outside groups came in and pounded her opponent, Jeff Peck.
Yeah.
The feeling is that
Farmer.
They may need to do that again to help her across the finish line. But she's maybe got a little bit of an edge, but that's going to be needed. They may need a big push again. And again, what will the Trump factor be like? Will you see a big turnout in western and northern Wisconsin for Trump? Will he play well? An interesting thing is that Republicans tell me that they're feeling right now like their candidates on the down ballot races are not being tied with Trump. Trump's not seen as a Republican, but seen as a Trump, if you will, a party unto himself.
Okay.
So they're feeling good that there would be a separation
between
the two. We'll see if that plays out.
I hate the presidential candidates, but my guy that's representing me or gals, still pretty effective. Assembly District 50, Art Schrader is an economic development, I think, for a credit union. He's an economic development officer. He's came in, and I interviewed him pre-primary and not pre-general. He's a pretty serious candidate, I think, but what I can't gauge, and help me understand, Ed Brooks has been there a long time.
He's been there for a while, and what's interesting is there's another seat in southwestern Wisconsin where the Republican at the bottom of the ticket can do better than the Democrat at the top. In 2012, Barack Obama won 54% there. Brooks won 50.3. So it shows you, again, that ticket-splitting dynamic. Here's the question. I've been told for like three cycles now by Democrats, we're going to get that seat. If not when beating Brooks, when he retires. So Brooks is not retired yet. So will this be the time? And I get really a different dynamic in talking to both sides about this one. The Democrats like Art Schrader. They feel like they can go after Brooks on a number of things, and they feel like this is the time, the environment. Republicans, again, saying there's that gap between the top and the bottom. He survived in wave years before. Why would this one be different? Because, oh, by the way, Hillary Clinton is not well-liked. They're not seeing a wave inspired by Clinton. Now, there could be a wave inspired by Trump doing poorly, but they're not seeing the a Clinton wave like Obama in 12 and 8.
Yeah, I agree. That's another one to watch. District 85. JR, I want to talk about this. This is a rematch between Pat Snyder, former talk radio, and then when he lost. Now, this is a rematch of 2012. Rematch of 2012. Pat Snyder then resigned as a radio talk show host on the Wausau station. Now I think he's been on Sean Duffy's staff.
Yes, I think he's outreach coordinator or something like that.
Okay, so you have a rematch. Now, what happened in 2012? Democrat Mandy Wright got 49.7% of the vote. Pat Snyder got 46.4%, and a third-party independent, Jim Mas, got 3.7%.
Yep.
So she barely won in 2012. But her vote total, 2012 to 2014, dropped 20%, whereas the Republicans' vote total only dropped 14%, which meant one-term Republican Dave Heaton, who was not seeking re-election, won by 85 votes. This is a heck of a rematch. I think it's a great race. I look forward to, on Monday, interviewing Senator Lassiter and Patrick Teston and Pat Snyder and Mandy Wright. Your thoughts?
If Mandy Wright had stayed at home in her district 2 years ago, she'd still be Rep Wright. That's kind of the vibe I've gotten from talking to people.
She played nice with Senator Schultz.
2014, in the middle of a horrible year for Democrats, a wave year for Republicans, she traveled the state with Dale Schultz talking about education. Now,
right.
Hey, laudable goal.
She's a former teacher.
Laudable goal, but when you're in a race, you need to stay home and work the district. And that was the post-mortem on that. So the theory being she's learned her lesson. She will stay at home. She will work hard. She's got a financial advantage. She's been working aggressively. She's basically been running since she lost in 2014.
Yeah.
It'll be a different environment this time around. Now, the caveat is, you know, Wausau is not necessarily like really deep blue territory, all right? It's a Dem-leaning seat top of the ticket. Back in 2014, the American Federation for Children was a big boost to Dave Heaton. While some Republicans have already said this race is done, don't pay attention to it, she's going to win. Hearing that AFC is going to be going in there or has gone in there is going to help doing something for Snyder, so they're not going to abandon it, but if I had to pick one seat likely to flip, that would be it right now.
Okay, but when you talk about AFC, you're talking about a pro-choice
third-party
group.
Yep.
Okay.
Very active in campaigns.
This is a great race, 85th. Okay, now let's move to the Marquette poll. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but let's touch on the presidential. Likely voters, Hillary 41, Trump 38, Gary Johnson 11, Jill Stein 2%. It's a margin of error race. CNN says it's a toss-up.
But we're not seeing, like, the outside groups come play here hard. And that we'll get that in stock for a little bit, but that's the one caveat. We look like we're there, but they didn't really put the effort in to take advantage of that opportunity. I'd say them, the Trump people and Republicans in general.
Okay, let's turn quickly. Marquette poll, U.S. Senate. No big shift in this last cycle. Democrat Russ Feingold, 44. Incumbent U.S. Senator Republican Ron Johnson, 39. And Mr. Anderson, the Libertarian, 7%. Your thoughts?
We talked last week a little about the dynamic of Johnson running these positive bio ads to build up his name ID, and people seem to like him. A new one out this week talking about the Joseph Foundation in Milwaukee, which he's involved in, that helps people in the inner city of Milwaukee get jobs in other places. Great program. But we're 7 weeks out, he's still building up his positive name ID. Somebody has to come in and go after Feingold and knock him down. Feingold's positive favorability rating bumped up 46% in that poll. Not quite sure why. There wasn't anything big happened in the 3 weeks between the two of them, so maybe a change in sample, maybe margin of error, but whatever reason, somebody has to bring Feingold down where Johnson have a chance. We're not seeing a big investment yet.
Yeah.
I think Let America Work, you know, added $50,000 to its existing buy like a week ago, so they're still around. But when will somebody come in and spend a lot of money to try and move the needle? Or can Johnson afford that negative track on his own? So keep pushing his positives, doing a negative. Right now, it's like Feingold's still in the driver's seat for that race.
Yep, I agree. Okay, let's spend just a moment talking about the passage of a Republican lion, conservative lion leader. Terry Kohler died on Tuesday at the age of 82. He advised Newt Gingrich, national candidates. He mentored a lot of candidates. He was obviously, a very successful businessman, head of Winway Capital Corporation. Ran for the U.S. Senate in 1980, governor in 1982. His other interests were kind of fascinating. Conservationist, environmentalist, He was a conservationist, environmentalist, and a philanthropist, and I must point out, he was an early backer of Wisconsin I. He's one reason that Wisconsin I was able to sign on. He was an R who believed in Wisconsin I, just like Chris Abley more than 10 years ago was a D who believed in Wisconsin I. So, and the governor said Terry Kohler was a leader in business, politics, sailing, wildlife conservation, aviation, efforts to promote strong marriage, and so much more. Any memories of Mr. Kohler?
No, but his father and grandfather both served as governor of Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Major donor, member of the RNC. This guy helped fund, if you will, the conservative cause in Wisconsin for a number of years.
And isn't there a plaque on State Republican Party headquarters? Thank you for thanks to Terry and Mary Kohler for buying the state GOP headquarters.
So I can't remember the top of my head, but I see their names a lot in campaign finance reports.
You bet. Okay. So moving on, stock report.
So Barack Obama, it's been interesting to watch his poll numbers in the Marquette poll. He's back up to like 54% job approval rating. And, you know, in one way, it's in part because you look at your alternatives for this election and go, well, that guy wasn't so bad. You know, maybe that's part of what's driving it. But the kind of takeaway is, you know, underneath all these poll numbers is, will Obama be a factor in Wisconsin in the fall election? If you're a Democrat, you're going, okay, I would love to have Barack Obama come to Milwaukee and Racine and places like that and drive up African-American turnout. Because while Clinton's kind of struggling in this, you know, 42, 44, 45% range, if he could really get the African-American community jazzed up and college kids in Madison and other places, that could really salt this race away.
Because his approval reading, you might have covered it, 58%.
Yeah. 54 was a job approval in this latest one. So,
okay, thanks.
So that could really help a lot. Now, the flip side is if you're a Republican, if you're Donald Trump, you're going, okay, the base is not really excited in the southeastern part of the state. How do I get them excited? Oh, by the way, Republicans do not like Barack Obama. So can I find a way to either run on Obamacare or him to kind of jazz that base a little bit and have it work to my favor without, like, hitting him too hard? Because if I get the African-American community going, oh, wait, he's really hitting my guy, they're going to go, whoa, this is not a good thing. So it's a delicate balance. But there's that intrigue, if you will, about what will Obama be a role in the fall election.
And you and I have seen the national clips. He is really, what do you say? I really, really, really want to elect Hillary Clinton. Three reallys. Okay, mixed.
So Trump, let's go back to the poll a little bit. What's been really interesting is the gap is down to a couple, 3 points.
41-38, yeah.
But you dig down a little bit, and you see that Hillary Clinton's numbers on things like qualified to be president, they're gotten better. Cares about people like me. I mean, all these factors like are a little bit better for her. She's still upside down, but she's like in the low to mid 40s now for her approval, for her favorability rating compared to Trump, who's still in those 30s. Here's the thing, though. While the state is kind of like on this cusp of being a swing state or a battleground again, we're not seeing a big investment. Now, the Reform America Fund group came in this week with a $1.2 million buy to go after Hillary Clinton about classified emails, the concussion, and the cough. The three C's, if you will. But that's not a huge buy. That's not enough to change in a statewide election. What I've been told, though, is that's an investment to see, well, can we get other money off the sidelines into Wisconsin to really invest in the statewide race? Because it could have a trickle-down effect for Ron Johnson, all those other things. So there's a feeling like it could happen, but we're not seeing Trump visit here.
Right.
We're not seeing him fundraise here that much. I mean, we're just not seeing the commitment. The flip side is Donald Trump is not really committed to any place, it seems like, at times, as TV ads. He's being outspent wildly, so neck and neck in the polls. So the thought is Trump needs Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, these places where you really see him invest. If he wins those places, and in North Carolina, then Wisconsin probably would come along in the tide because it means that Trump has flipped the tide nationally, and he's ahead, and we'd be icing the cake for him, if you will.
Yes, but the 90-minute debate on Monday is going to be one of the most watched ever, but let's not go there.
I have never heard more anticipation for a debate in my 16 years in the Capitol. It is amazing. I do not know what to think is going to happen or what bar will be used to judge Donald Trump.
I'm so sick of hearing people interviewing, you know, debate specialists on all the different ways they could appeal. I mean, we're still 3 days out and they're still rolling. Okay, anyway, I'm sorry. We're straying here.
100 million people may watch this thing.
I know,
but anyway.
I know. Falling.
So Robin Voss.
Whoa.
This transportation debate, the standoff has not moved, right? Robin Voss and Governor Walker have not moved one bit.
They exchanged letters.
Yeah. To Robin's credit, his caucus has remained either quiet or they haven't really kind of agitated, you know, we're breaking off.
Right.
But this week, Scott Fitzgerald did not do him a favor. He basically isolated Robin Voss in the Assembly caucus over here, saying, I realize the parameters that Governor Walker is laying down. My caucus is split. We will work within his parameters. Now, that means more incumbent upon Robin and Assembly GOP leadership to kind of drive this push for revenue uppers. Other thing is, I asked about this for weeks. Robin's leadership team is solid behind him, mm-hmm, on saying there's a problem, we got to fix more revenue.
Very solid.
I don't know that the rank and file are there with him. That's not to say everybody, but I'm talking about, are there enough votes? Are there 50 votes in that caucus for gas tax hike? I don't know that there are right now. Will guys like a Bob Gannon, for example, in Slinger, Wisconsin, vote for tax increase? Adam Jarko, I saw him on Twitter this week saying we shouldn't raise taxes, period. Now, again, to his credit, Robin's credit, they're not like openly advocating or really kind of breaking off with him, but I don't know they're there with him, and now he's got to fight this battle with Fitz saying, we're kind of over here. Right. Well, it's a more difficult position for him.
And Gannon's senator, I think, is Dewey Strobel. And Dewey Strobel and Senator Steve Nassif said, we love the governor's budget because it does not raise taxes or fees.
A little subtext to all this. So I-94 is a new hostage in this situation because Governor Walker doesn't want to fund 94 Northwest, which is in Robin's district.
Yes.
This week, Robin said, well, I don't want to do East-West and spend the $31 million for preliminary work if we don't have more money for roads. So this road has become a hostage, like a symbol, if you will, the standoff. I won't do this, you won't do that.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Hey, we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you about one more thing. The Wisconsin Democracy Campaign has filed a complaint with the federal government, which agency,
IRS, I believe.
IRS, thank you. Over the conduct of Club for Growth, mm-hmm. Which is a nonprofit entity going out raising money. Governor Walker actively raised money. What are your thoughts? Is that going to be a big deal?
I saw a similar complaint filed in 2014, I think it was, and I haven't heard much about it since. So I don't think it's going to go anywhere, barring some new revelation or something new. So we've seen this before a little bit.
Okay, thanks. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.